Thanks so much for joining me today on the Cocktie Podcast. I'm your host, Gary. In case you're new to the show, I'm the editor and local stamp collector here at fortnerd.com. What do you mean, what's a stamp? You use them when you mail things. What? No, you don't need a stamp for... You may have seen me as the DM for Quest for the Cure, or on Ice Hole's Rime of the Frost Maiden, as Cicero on Cyberpunk Independence, as Doc on Scribes and Scrolls, or sailing on the SS Failboat over at Talon and Claw. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the show or follow us on social media at fortnerd.com. That's at fortnerd, D-O-T-C-O-M. Or do both. Both works for me, but whatever works fine for you is fine with me. The biggest news is that this weekend is D&D Live 2021. D&D has teamed up with G4 to create a massive streaming and news bonanza that's going to take up your entire Saturday and Sunday. And let me tell you, you aren't going to want to miss a thing. Day one includes a deep dive into the unannounced book that we know about and has been teased for this coming weekend but know zero details about. We know it's not Strixhaven or Wild Beyond the Witchlight because both of those are already scheduled. Strixhaven's deep dive is on Sunday and Wild Beyond the Witchlight is later on Saturday. So what it is a mystery. We don't know what it is and we don't know when it'll be released. It could be the Dragonlance book that I'm expecting or could be something else. We really don't know. The first streaming event is called the Chaos Carnival. It's hosted by Abria Iyengar and features WWE superstars Xavier Woods, Ember Moon, Mace, and Tyler Breeve. The Chaos Carnival is a charity stream and benefits Connor's Cure, which is named after WWE superfan Connor Michalek, who was suffering from a rare type of tumor that affected his brain and spinal cord. Triple H and Stephanie McMahon started the charity in 2014 after Connor was lost to this rare disease. So far, Connor's Cure has raised $3.5 million and has helped 500 families. There's also going to be a panel on the new Magic the Gathering set, Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, which, if you're following the TTRPG space, I'm sure you've seen ads for. It combines the game of Magic with the world of D&D. And looks to be very exciting. I know a lot of lapsed Magic players who continue playing D&D are interested, and I know some Magic players who are interested in checking out D&D. This may be the nexus that brings D&D fans and Magic the Gathering players much closer together. The next streaming experience is going to be the Palace of the Vampire Queen. It's DM'd by TTRPG legend B. Dave Walters and features a table that includes actor and comedians such as Patton Oswalt, Nick Payne, Marissa Baram, Allison Snyder, and Jacob Houston. Given the name of the game and B. Dave's job as DM for the Ravenloft themed stream The Black Dice Society, it may be reasonable to expect a mild horror game set in that world, which provide an interesting contrast to the comedians who are included at the table. The game benefits Alice's kids, supporting families getting necessities that they couldn't otherwise afford. Backpacks, glasses, quote-unquote, necessities. It's an incredible charity that serves children in 46 of the U.S.'s 50 states. I'd encourage you to tune in for that. After that stream, we get the aforementioned Wild Beyond the Witchlight discussion and what we might expect from the new book. After that, it's a Dungeon Master Showdown. Is the showdown related to the recently announced DM contest? Maybe, but I haven't seen what it is, so I can't say for sure. D&D superfan Jason Charles Miller caps off the night with a musical performance. Day 2 starts off with a DM roundtable, and then goes into probably the most star-studded stream of the day. Lost Odyssey presents Last Light, featuring Jack Black, Reggie Watts, Lauren Lupkus, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, and Tiffany Haddish. What an incredible group of stars playing Dungeons & Dragons. Their DM is Kate Welsh, and the table benefits Extra Life and Children's Miracle Network hospitals across North America. It's amazing, and I expect this show is going to be one that you shouldn't miss. After that, we'll see a cosplay cooking a hero's feast, which may be related to the D&D cookbook, or dressing up as your characters, or maybe combining the two. Who's to say? After that, Amy Vorpal leads Dr. Lupo, Nega Oryx, Ife Nwadiwe, Kevin Pereira, Adam Sessler, and Fiona Nova through Flubby Bonds and Guzzle Shucks. It sounds like it's going to be a wacky good time, and it benefits the Pavlov Foundation, which benefits children fighting cancer. It's a charity that invests in cutting-edge pediatric cancer research, but also improves the lives of children living with cancer by exposing them to the arts. After Amy's take comes a dive into the new Strixhaven book, and then the last stream, Faster Purple Worm, Kill, Kill. Maybe it's a pulp D&D event featuring a purple worm? That's just a guess. Including DM John Ciccolini, Seth Green, B. Dave Walters, Deborah Ann Wool, Xander Janeray, and host Bill Rahor from Beetle and Grimms, it promises to be a ride. Obviously, this is an incredible weekend of news and streams, and it's going to be a blast. I hope this very quick, all right, your definition of quick may differ from mine, summary of the weekend's events gets you more excited for the rest of this year from D&D, because it is wild. Also in the news is Quest for the Cure. We're hosting a side quest adventure this weekend over on Talon and Claw. It's a flip-flop and chop adventure featuring myself, Anthony and Travis from Talon and Claw, and guests Neofet, D20, and Josh. Now D20 has been conspiring with my girlfriend Allie, so I'm very afraid of what that means for our hero. The DM is as yet to be revealed, but it will be on Talon and Claw's Twitch channel. That's Talon and Claw. I'll have the link for that in my show notes. This week I wanted to do something a bit different. No guest, because I wanted to chat a little bit about my experience with Dark Alliance, the new game from D&D and Tuke that provides players through the story of the Crystal Shard, the first adventure of Driss Doerden and the Companions of the Hall. The game's been out for a couple weeks, and as some of you have seen on our Twitch channel, Allie and I have been playing through. I don't know what scares the monsters more, our weapons, or our arguments. Now, just as a point of full disclosure, I was provided a download code for the game, but unfortunately I didn't have the time to use it, so I've just been playing on my PC using Game Pass since it's come out. Also, because it's important, I play the game using an Xbox controller, not a mouse and keyboard. I understand that there may be some issues with the mouse and keyboard experience, but I'm using a controller, so my review and feedback is based on that. Overall, the game is really fun. There's a depth to it that increases as you level, and leveling your character has consequential effects on the abilities you have in the game. Many of the decisions you make feel relevant. The story does seem a bit light so far, but the graphics are acceptable and the character customization, while limited, do look cool. Like I said, I've enjoyed the game and would recommend it, especially if you have one or two friends who are able to play through it with you. Of course, there are some bugs. Nothing's been groundbreaking so far. There's one enemy whose hitbox seems too large, and I'm getting hit even when dodging out of the way, but nothing's prevented me from enjoying the game, and I can live with what I've found so far. I would recommend you get the game if you love cooperative brawlers. There are some light puzzles, but it's mostly a light strategy, smash them up, grab the loot, kill some monsters, and move forward type game. Now let's talk about what it is. As I said, it's an action RPG cooperative brawler. Four heroes are seeking the Crystal Shard to restore balance to Icewind Dale, and they'll need to hack and slash their way through goblins, orcs, and giants to do it. The game has four character choices: Wulfgar the Barbarian, Drisk the Light Infantry, Caddybri the Archer, and Brunor the Tank. You'll have the opportunity to quest with these heroes, find and equip new gear, improve your abilities, and gain new moves and powers. Like D&D, each character has six attributes: Strength, Dexterity, Con, Intelligence, Wisdom, Charisma, and each is tied to a different game element. It's D&D-esque, but unlike, say, Dungeons & Dragons Online, it isn't strictly using D&D rules. Strength, for example, improves your character's physical damage, but it also improves your armor. Overall, your character has a cumulative attack rating which determines your damage, and that's derived from a number of things. You're able to equip different types of gear, such as a weapon, a helmet, bracers, ring, etc., and you can provide some minor customization in the way they look. Some items are unique and can't be reskinned, but most have 1-5 variations and you can align your colors to match. For example, if you make all your items variation 3, they'll all look very similar. You can sell excess equipment at the shop and use the crystals you find to upgrade that equipment you like to make it better. You gain feat points, which allow you to customize your character and give him or her some uniqueness and flair. Now, gold is the primary currency in the game, and you use it to upgrade your equipment and your abilities. Equipment is simple. Pick the gear you want to improve, trade in the crystals and gold, and your item is upgraded. Your abilities are a bit different. It is a video game, so you buy moves using your gold, and moves allow you to take different actions in the game. When you start at level 1, you'll get 2 powers, a light and a heavy attack, a block, a roll, a jump, nothing fancy. But as you start earning gold, you can gain access to new moves. Brunor, for example, can buy a move that turns him into a rolling dwarf that attacks his enemy's stamina. Each character has a unique move set, which you can build out to your liking. Over time, you can get a nice suite of moves that you can use in the game. For example, as I've been leveling, Bruner now has a stomp that he can use as AoE and push enemies off ledges, and a shield slam that inspires and heals his allies. These are some of the main decision points you make in the game. They're related to character building. Where do you put your stat point upgrades? For example, do you increase your strength to buff your armor class and damage? Or do you increase your constitution to enhance your HP and resistance? Intelligence, wisdom, and charisma are important too, as intelligence, for example, determines your ability cooldowns, and charisma relates to the charge power of your ultimate ability, your most powerful cooldown. Wisdom improves your defense against conditions like stun. As Bruner, I've pumped my strength and constitution as any respectful dwarf should, but I've also invested heavily in intelligence because I want my abilities and I want them to cool down faster. Now, while I like charging my ultimate more quickly, Bruner isn't exactly charismatic, and it feels like a hill I'm not ready to climb, even though the charisma is tied to charging that ultimate ability. You also get feats, one per level. Similar to feats in D&D, they each do a different thing. Bruner has access to 21, so eventually you'll get most of them. Really, your main choice is what order to do them in. I've personally found potions really helpful, so I maxed out my potion supplies as quickly as I could. Their powers vary by character, but Bruner, for example, has one that gives him a bonus to his armor, health and conditions, adds damage bonus to elites, and even provides a 5% overall damage boost to himself and all nearby allies. As I mentioned, during your adventures you gain gold, and then you use the gold to upgrade your moves and equipment. For example, if you buy the Blocking Crusher moves, which is one of the first available to Bruner, when you block and you pull the right trigger, you can do a crushing attack that knocks down your enemies and potentially charms monsters. Like feats, eventually you'll be able to unlock all the moves. For me, the problem isn't so much unlocking them, but remembering them and how to do them. Every now and then, I'll break out a cool move and will have no idea how to replicate it. No, I'm not a button masher. Yes, I may be lying. Like most games, harder difficulty drops better gear. I'll talk more about that in a second, but gold is also used to level up your gear, as I've said, alongside crystals, which are the consumables you gather throughout your adventures. You can use your gold to buy different potions as well, above and beyond just healing. You can get bombs, stamina, or ultimate regeneration potions. Each of them has an associated gold cost, and the more gold you invest, the more effective those potions be. But be warned, you get potions in chests, and if you've purchased the others, they may drop instead of health when you really need health. For example, I only have health potions, and every time we open a small chest, I get health potions. For Allie, however, it's a crapshoot. She may need health, but she gets bombs instead. It's also probably why I have more gold than her, even if I am lower level, which I will get to shortly. One element that I'm enjoying is the push your luck notion of resting or not. At certain points during a level, after a minor boss fight, you can choose to rest. It refreshes your potions, it locks your progress into that point, which means enemies if you die, you start at this new point with the path with the level behind you cleared. Or you can push your luck and not rest, which improves the level of loot you get. However, if you didn't rest and you die, you need to start at the nearest rest point or at the beginning if you didn't rest at all. The worst news? All those enemies have respawned, so you either have to run past them or fight through them. Allie and I usually blunder forward without resting, because that's what heroes do. There are four basic stories in the game, and each basic story has three acts. Once you complete those, and now I'm assuming here, since I haven't done it, that it unlocks the three boss levels, the Giant, the Mind Flayer, and the Lich. Each story has six levels of difficulty, so there's potentially a lot of things to do. If you wanted to play each level at each difficulty, that's 18 runs, if you don't mind repeating some things. But the higher the difficulty, the better the rewards. The levels are static, though, so if you do a mission on the easiest mode and then come back to it later on a harder difficulty, everything will be the same, the enemies will just be harder to kill. For example, gold on the ground will still be on the ground, crystal locations will be the same, etc. One thing that I enjoyed is that as you adventure, each character has a trigger which allows their allies to perform a team attack. For example, when Caddy Bree takes an aimed shot and kills an enemy, all her allies can perform a team attack which does a ton of damage. You work well as a team, and you mow through your enemies more quickly. As I said, Allie is playing Caddy Bree, and hers gets activated all the time. Mine? I will be honest, I haven't figured out how to do mine. I don't know how to trigger it so that I'm allowing her to make a team attack, but I'm almost level 20, which is the cap, so I'm sure I'll figure it out soon enough, right? The game feels very much like a fun action-y representation of a D&D game. Work as a team, use the terrain, kill the bad guys, find that loot. As I said, overall I really like it. It's a very fair representation of a D&D game, if you include the fact that it's a video game. I like the RPG light elements too. Playing with other people is a lot of fun. Now, I've only duoed, but I hope to play with 3 or 4 players in the very near future. I know some reviewers have expressed displeasure with the game, but I know very obviously that they played the game solo, at least some of them. And while, as JF Champagne, who I'm interviewed about the game before the release, said, and I'm paraphrasing here, the game can definitely be played solo, but it's best experienced in a group. I almost wonder if forcing a 2-player minimum might have avoided the lower scores that the game has received. The way the loot looks is cool, and it's varied and does different things, so as you're collecting the different sets, they all give you different powers and abilities. There are set bonuses at 3, 5, and 8, which I really like, because if you have a set of 3 and a set of 5 out of 8 pieces of gear, you're still getting a bunch of bonuses, although the more powerful bonuses are of course at a single set of 8 pieces. As I mentioned, we've been streaming the game, and that led to one thing I haven't enjoyed. We're basically level capped out now. We've been repeating the levels on harder difficulty to get better loot, and we're already at level 20. Well, Allie is. I'm only level 19 because she seems to be getting more XP than me. Yes, this also happened in Outriders. No, I'm not still mad about it. And yes, I may be lying. We unlocked all the moves fairly quickly because tearing through all the content at higher difficulties meant more and more gold for us. We're very much still looking forward to exploring the new levels, but we only have one act in one story and 3 acts in another to complete before getting to the red boss levels, and we're already capped out. This shouldn't be a problem for you if you don't go back and repeat the content, but it is for us because we did. Dark Alliance is by no means a perfect game. Sure, there are bugs and it doesn't always work perfectly, but it's fun. And if that isn't the rating scale, what is the point of the rating scale? The graphics are okay, there's something we've seen before, but they don't look bad. The gameplay is enjoyable, and the leveling system, while simple, provides you investment in your character. You have the graphical customization for your gear so you can make it look the way you want. And it's fun. Did I mention it's fun? If you've played the previous Dark Alliance games, or the arcade classic Gauntlet or X-Men, you should probably enjoy Dark Alliance. As I've said, it's definitely geared toward team play, and while I wouldn't discourage you from playing solo, your experience will be vastly improved if you're playing with your friends. If you have that option, I would definitely encourage you to pick up the game. For now, we'll see you in Icewind Dale. Thanks so much for joining me today, and remember, if the die is cocked, it doesn't count.